Hello, everybody. This is Stelly Efty.
And this is Heaton Shaw.
And in today's episode of the Startup Chat, we're going to talk about the questions that you guys had after you read our newest ebook, which is the Going from Zero to 1,000 Customers and Beyond.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life. And hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
Yeah, we want you to do your best.
For those of you out there that didn't get a chance to read the book or get their hands on it, just shoot me an email, stelly@close.io, and I'll send you the ebook, and you can take a look at it. But it basically was based on four episodes of the podcast that we had recorded. The first one was, how to get your first customer, how to get from zero to 10 customers, how to get your first 100 customers, how to get to 1,000 customers, and then how to scale beyond 1,000 customers. We had a bunch of episodes. These were some of our most popular ones. And so we put all that content together in a little book. The book is very, very popular. A lot of people seem to like it. And I sent an email out asking for people who read it to give feedback and ask questions. And we got a ton of questions, and I just want to go through them with you, Heaton, and see if we can help people even more with this topic.
Yeah, that sounds good. I'm glad that people ask questions. It'd be great to answer to them because I always get frustrated when someone tells me, "Hey, do you want to know more?" And then I ask a question, I don't get an answer. So yeah, I would love to sort of do that. Let's go at it. Rapid fire, I'm assuming, right?
Yes. But one quick disclaimer in case people haven't noticed it yet. I just had surgery the other day. I'm under heavy painkiller medication. I feel slightly drunk. When I told this to Heaton, he got very excited. He's like, let's see what kind of shenanigans we're going to be able to get out of Stelly. So with that disclaimer out of the way, let's dive into the questions. So the first question is funny, is a question that two different people asked. So I'm going to combine it. But the basic question is, what do I do or what do we do when we have a product that can be both sold to consumers as well as to businesses? So there's a B2C and a B2B play. And the question is really like, should we launch both at the same time and try to acquire business customers and end consumer customers? Should we do one first and then roll it out to the other? Should we do it under different brands? How do we market this? Basically, the question was, these two startups have something they think they can sell both to consumers as well as to businesses. And they're trying to figure out, as they're thinking about acquisition and growing, how to approach this. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, if you're not building a marketplace where you need both of them on the same platform or the same product, then you basically want to actually just pick one and go after it. And pick the one that's, some trade-off between like easiest to get to as well as easiest to monetize. Get to meaning get to with your marketing. And monetize obviously means that they'll actually pay you. Usually that does end up being a B2B case unless you have some kind of virality or referral system that would work better with a consumer-oriented focus. So picking one is really important. The caveat is if you have some form of a marketplace like something, eBay is probably the most classic one where you have buyers and sellers and it's two-sided, then you want to be a little bit smarter because you know you're going to need both of them. And in that case, you go after one that will get you get the other one to come on board. So oftentimes, like with eBay early on, it's like a lot of people who are selling goods already had people who are buying from them or those people would promote to others. So it was easier to get the sellers on board before the buyers. So that's the kind of just high level way I would attempt to answer the question. I always find it interesting when people think they can sell to both and they don't pick one because that tends to lead to a lot of flailing. And a lot of loss of time. Best cases, you lose time. Worst cases, you don't make it.
Yeah, it's very rare for a company to do both at the same time very, very successfully. It's so rare, I cannot think of an example on top of my mind. I mean, there's many examples where a company has started. I think there are examples of companies doing B2C and then moving into B2B successfully. Dropbox might be an example, an obvious example for this. Where they were super focused on end consumer, didn't want to do enterprise or business deals. And then once they had massive scale, they went into the B2B world and they're doing well there as well. This way, so going from B2C to B2B seems to be the more common way. I don't know of any examples, I think, of a company starting B2B and then transitioning to B2C. So that seems to be rare, but I completely agree with you. Pick one and focus on that, and then you might grow into the other area. But doing both things in parallel at the same time, usually not the best idea. Next question is about converting trial customers or trials. So Marianne asks, you know, what are some of the best practices and best ways for us to move off free trial customers to fully paid accounts? What do you guys recommend? Should it be a 14-day or 30-day trial? Should it be a credit card upfront or not? What are kind of some of the basic advice that we would share with people to make sure that as they're marketing, get trial signups, they convert as many of these into new customers?
Yeah, I have a very simple answer to that, which is get them engaged during the trial. I don't think it's really about 30-day, 14-day, 7-day. I can definitely discuss trial-like lengths and what you should pick. And I'm sure you can too, Stelly. But at the end of the day, like if they're not engaged, they will never pay you. So the first step would be during a trial, no matter how long it is or how short it is or what kind of trial it is, you want people to engage. You want them to do the things that they're supposed to do with your product. So just spending a ton of time making sure the interface, the emailing, even if you're getting on them on the phone and doing account management, making sure all of that is set up in such a way where you can actually get them to engage and get active with the product and you start using it, inviting their team members in if that's appropriate, creating projects if it's a project management tool, adding customers if it's a CRM tool or potential customers. All those kind of things are really more important than anything else with any SaaS product, but especially during a trial period when you're really wanting them to explore the product and understand it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think obviously there's a lot of optimization that you can do down the line in terms of the trial length, credit card, or the general sign-up form, what kind of information do people have to put in or not, pricing, all these things will affect conversion rates. But in the early days, and we're talking about people that go from having no customers to wanting to scale to 1,000 customers, in that first few hundred customers, I would do anything and everything to get in touch with these people, to talk to them, to meet them, to understand them, to engage them in any way possible, and not worry too much about the automated part of this or the optimized, it should be a 13-day trial or a 17-day trial. Like all this stuff is cool and you can experiment with, but I don't think it's the number one priority when you begin with this stuff. All right, so next question from Nathan. So Nathan asks a funny question. So he basically says, you know, that they are self-funding their startup. They're trying to just finance it themselves in those early days and push for growth. And he says, you know, we only have budget for one big marketing bet to really push our growth and the launch of the company. How would you decide what that big bet should be since they have limited funds? Now, I have an opinion on this, but I'm interested to hear yours.
I've been going first, so why don't you go first?
All right. So my I'm instantly a little critical about the mindset here of wanting to launch this with a big bang and saying we only have budget for one big bet. Even the word bet in this context is something I'm not a huge fan of, right? So this is not this is not playing the lottery. This is trying to build a business. So I don't know necessarily, or I don't believe necessarily that you have to launch with a big bang or place a big bet. Why not just, you know, hustle and put sweat equity into this and send emails and write blog posts and go to places and shake hands, kiss babies, meet people and try to convince people to become customers of yours one at a time. And as you learn more about those customers and their needs and as you get more confidence and more data that you actually have a solution that works, that people want, you can start allocating more and more money into marketing this thing and growing it. But the mindset of we have this idea, we have a little bit of money and we want to put all this money into some big marketing push, I think that that's a really bad idea. The chances that you're going to waste that money onto something that doesn't work is very high. So I would just in general recommend a different mindset here.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. It's already the logic that you and I both would want to break down and say, why are you thinking about it as one big launch? So the question for that person we would just pose back, I think, is just, why are you thinking of it as one big bang? How can you use your capital more effectively at learning what you need to do and splitting up those resources into experiments instead of thinking that one big bang is going to solve a problem for you or the problem.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to the next one. Next question was asked by Raheel. So he had a two-part question. One was, so he built a technical tool and launched it. He has 15 people right now that were kind of in his personal network that he got to start using his tool. He's getting a bunch of feedback, but now he's wondering, how should he think about prioritizing that feedback? Which feedback should he act on versus ignore? So how do we, you know, he has 15 people using it. They all have their ideas, their feedback, their requests. Now he's in this situation where he wonders, how do I know how to prioritize what to build, what not to build, what to give people to? And a big question mark here for him was also, you know, are 10 to 15 people enough in the beginning, or do I need much bigger numbers to get the amount of feedback I need to really build something that works?
This is one of the most common problems at any scale of a business, which is like, I'm getting all this input from customers. What do I do? It's something actually I've been digging into in my email newsletter and learning a lot about it. So it's interesting that this question comes up in this context of getting customers too. The short answer is 15 might be enough if you're getting a good signal and there's a pattern in what people are saying. So I think the first easy thing to do would be figure out what the commonalities are in all the feedback you're getting and see if there's any easy things you just know obviously you need to implement that would solve problems for the majority of those 15 people, whether it's like 7 of them or 10 of them or all of them, and implement that. And then now if your feedback is completely all over the place or you don't know who to listen to, just the simple trick, and I think Stella, you'd agree, is like go listen to the people that are going to pay the most money or that are paying you the most money or have the most potential to pay the most money. I think those two things should get you pretty far when you only have 15 people's feedback. I personally have seen 15 people's feedback be very useful when it's really either in a target demographic and or a target persona that I'm looking for, target customer base, or if it helps me sort out who the right customer is for my product.
Yeah, I think that that's spot on. And I would add that the way that I think about this stuff is that there's like a pyramid of like validation. And at the bottom, the lowest level of validation that you can get is people, you know, taking a look at your tool and telling you it's cool or I like the idea or something like that. A level above that is people actually truly using it. So I would just look at these 15 people and say, are they all equally active using the tool as much? Or did, you know, 10 out of those 15 use it for a day, gave you feedback and never logged in again, and the other 5 are actually, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks into this, still using it daily, right? So usage is a much bigger vote of confidence or intent or interest, and much stronger signal. One level above that would be a verbal agreement that they would want to pay money for this. So asking somebody, hey, if I start charging in 2 months, I plan to start charging whatever it is, $25, $50, $100 a month. Are you going to be a customer? You know, is this valuable enough for you to make this a no-brainer? And even then, you know, so the people that say yes, that's a much stronger signal that people just liking and using the product. And at the top of the pyramid in terms of validation is people that say, not just say, yes, I would pay for it, but, you know, you might be able to do a limited alpha with them and tell them, hey, if you put down whatever $250 now, you're going to have a lifetime discount of this and that, and you're going to get all these perks for being one of the first people to purchase the product. And obviously money talks, and money in business is the strongest form of validation, right? Not in life, but in business. So I would just try to segment it that way. To me, I don't know, 10, 15 people enough or not. It can be plenty, but in the early days, I probably would start adding, you know, just casually try to every week add a few more people to the platform and try to understand who's the target audience and then focus on them. All right. So the next question that Raheel had is another good one, I think, which is basically the question is, when should he start doing the marketing launch or a marketing campaign? He says right now, based on everything he read and based on the stuff that he listened to from us, his plan is to wait until his beta testers are giving him a lot of positive feedback and their retention is really, really high, and then really start thinking about being ready to do marketing and sales and push this. And he was wondering if we agree with this and how we would time it in terms of when to start doing marketing, when is it too early versus too late?
Yeah, it just depends on if you're ready for more customers or not. If you want more customers and you feel like your product has some level of usage and people do like it, if not love it, it is good to, like you were saying, even on the earlier question, to start getting more people in. It's really a estimation and a call that you have to make based on your business and your needs of more customers or not. I do tend to prefer to wait until I know that the product's ready and that people are actually ready to start using it in the sense of like you have retention or there's some level of product market fit, because otherwise you're just basically going to waste a lot of effort and time and money on marketing. Again, that being said, bringing more people into the product is always a good thing, especially if that can help you start learning faster.
Yeah, I agree. I think that in the early days, I am a big believer that retention is more important even than just pure acquisition, right? When you're if you're a really good marketer, a really good salesperson, a really passionate entrepreneur and founder, you're going to be able to convince a good amount of people to give your tool or your product a try. But then having them use it daily, having them stay with it, that's really a much stronger signal that you're onto something. So yeah, I think that you can do both at the same time, but I also think it's important for people to realize that the product launch and the marketing launch don't have to be the same thing. They can be completely disconnected from each other, and you can start adding more and more customers at a slower pace as you're developing some core functionality and as you're getting to real product market fit. And then once you really are, you know, you have testimonials, you have a good customer base, you know who your customer is, you know, you've experimented a little bit with channels and know what works, what doesn't work. You have maybe some resources in terms of team and financing. You're in a place where you can handle a lot more. Then you can do the big public, like we're just launching. But a lot of companies that have a big marketing launch, they had launched the product a year before. Nobody really knows. So these two things are disconnected. And I think it's good for people and startups to realize that and know that they don't have to do both things at the same time. And they can focus first on getting the fundamentals right on the product before they really pour a lot of money and energy into doing a big marketing launch. All right, so we have a ton more questions, Heaton, and I think what we should do to just keep the timeline that we typically have for these episodes is just wrap this one up, and we'll do a second part with the next list of questions. And I would just encourage people to listen to the four episodes that we recorded on kind of the four key milestones in customer acquisition, going from no customers to 1,000 customers and beyond. We'll link to these episodes in the show notes for this episode, so you're going to be able to easily access them. And then, as I said, if you want to have the book and read it or circulate it, you can. The easiest solution here right now is just to shoot me an email, me or Heaton an email, and we'll send you the ebook, no problem. But let's wrap up this episode, and then we'll record one, you know, soon with the rest of the questions. You guys sent a ton of good questions. Also, if you listen to us now and you haven't sent us an email or a question yet, but you do have a question along the lines on how to acquire 1,000 customers and beyond, just shoot us an email and let us know. We might do even a third Q&A session.
Yep. Thanks.